podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Good morning, everybody. It is the Blue Room, and it's time for another one of our Blue Room Extra Previews. Here at the end of another busy week for the Blues, but one which has ultimately not yielded a new centre forward, but does end with a big game on Saturday against Nottingham Forest at Goodison Park. Huge one that, and we've been all over it this week. And there's a little bit of a sample of what we've been doing. Three shows sampled today. The first one is from our Subs Weekly podcast, where I was joined by Dave Downey and Ryan Reynolds. That was a conversation we had about Dele Alli amid his apparently impending move to Turkey. Later in the week, I also spoke to Rob Vera about Everton's transfer lack of activity, as you call it, on the transfer podcast. And we started off the show by speaking about whether we were concerned by how late Everton had left the business. And finally, I spoke to Matt Davis, who covers Nottingham Forest over at the Nottingham Post and hosts the Garibaldi podcast, to find out what's been going on there and what has been an extremely eventful summer for them. I think the deal for Morgan Gibbs-White that's going to go through today for $44.5 million is going to be their 16th signing of the summer ahead of this weekend. So plenty going on. As ever, just a reminder, if you want to join us over on the Blue Room Extra, it's patreon.com/theBlueRoomExtra. The links to all these shows to listen in full are in the description. And yeah, hopefully we'll see you over there. Works out around about £1 a week. You can cancel it whenever you'd like. And going into the new season, going into the end of the transfer window, it is the absolute best time to subscribe. So it's patreon.com/theBlueRoomExtra. Links in the description there if you want to click and listen to any of these shows and get access to a whole mountain of extra content as well. So hopefully we'll see you over there. And in the meantime, hope you enjoy these segments from the shows you've been doing this week.
Well, it was like he was a partner of Kane. It was always Dele and Kane are going to leave Spurs. You'd see it in all sorts of media that it was them two going to PSG after Pochettino went over there, Matt, as well. I know that didn't work out in the end over there, like, but, you know, I just remember the goal he scored, funnily enough, against Palace for Spurs. It's a magic goal. You'd see it so easily if you search for it on Twitter, where he sort of flicks it over his head and then volleys it into the bottom corner. I looked at that and I thought, wow, look at this kid and how good he is. If you told me at that time that he'd be at Everton 7 years later, I'd have said, no, absolutely no chance unless he's had a failed career. And that's
I don't know, we've become amazing with Florian Machiri's money.
Yeah, well, exactly. It'd either be Everton and become really, really good on a Champions League side, which obviously was going to be unlikely. Or he's sort of, like you say, someone had chewed him up and spat him out. I think he's been guilty of that himself as well at times. And he's one of the few that have come to us who have been desperate for it to work for him. I think remembering feeling the same when Alan Lennon came as well. When we've signed players who just look that close to being top class, but then sadly, like I say, there's a reason. I don't mean to slag us off, but there's a reason why they've ended up at Everton. When we have been a bit of a show for a very long time, haven't we? Certainly under Farhad Moshiri for the most part. And to be fair, you know, I think he's played 13 games for us. Most of them are off the bench, aren't they, as well?
All but one.
So, you know, I'm thinking, has he been given a fair crack of the whip? I don't know. Clearly, I think Frank Lampard isn't the kind of manager who would just naturally say, no, you're not starting, and sort of push him out of things a little bit. I think they'll have been. And look, I'm only saying this in my own opinion. I've not heard anything or we haven't seen anything of this, but it looks to me, even down to the body language you see from him in particular, I look and think, does it look like he's just essentially just going through the milieu of issues that he's had, that he's ended up at Everton, that he's not really asked and he just wants to win in the wages that he needs to win at the level of football that he's always been for his entire career?
Well, you go back to that Spurs documentary, don't you? And you saw it on that.
The clip with Mourinho's done the rounds, hasn't it, on Twitter? Yeah. Again, something that's gone a bit viral as well. And look, I hate to stereotype and just throw a player like that into a pigeonhole and say that's exactly what he's like, but it is difficult to see that he's changed, because he's got every talent he wants. We've seen that before. He's got everything you could want as a young, relatively young English midfielder who's got the world at the feet. Yet things just haven't worked for him towards the end of his time at Spurs, it looked like a bit of a false dawn, didn't it? It looked like he was actually getting things together, looking decent. Then for him to end up at us, I mean, you could only see it now, couldn't you, when he's talking to his friends or his family saying that he's going to Everton. I bet you get a few of them going, no, what are you doing that for? You know, why aren't you staying down? Because he's coming from London as well and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I mean, if he was to go to take in, it looks like, I think from the reports I've seen, certainly working at the BBC as well, the reports that I've seen so far is that it's going to be a loan. I'm not sure what help that does to any of us, really. Only him. It's another. You know, a different track he's going to walk down if he goes there on loan. Everton financially, what does that get him off the wages books for a while? That's the only thing, really. There's clearly, I don't know about what you think about this, both of you. I'd be really interested to find this out. Do you think had the appointment of him, the signing of him from Spurs, not been the situation it's been in the agreements, as in 10 games we pay money, 20 games we pay money, it's X amount of million of pounds and whatnot, do you think we'd have seen him more if that wasn't the case? I know that sounds quite cynical, but that's the way I feel. I think we'd have seen him more, maybe even start more games, had that not been part of how he signed for us, that quite remarkable circumstance in which he signed for us and how it all comes to pass that we have to pay a certain amount after a certain amount of, it's a very particular and quite complicated form of how you sign a player. I'm thinking that there's part of that, or certainly I hope not in terms of Frank Lampard thinks of it, but something that'll have been said to both the player and Lampard that will only play him if you know he's going to be really good for us, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you think, Ryan, but I imagine it's one of them that they would have sort of judged through as they went. You know, he came in and looked hungry and fit and started well. Then I imagine, you know, paying 10 million after 20 games wouldn't have been a problem if you're scoring goals and look like he was going to be part of the team. But
is there a pressure straight away from that, though, Matt, do you think? Certainly for him, obviously, to perform.
I don't think so. I think when we signed him, the one thing that people said about this deal and why it was so good was that, well, if he comes in and is awful, we can get rid of him for nothing in the summer and we won't have had to paid anything apart from his wages. And that's why at the time we all thought it was a good signing and it made a lot of sense. I think initially there's some reports about paying 20 million for him outright and we all kind of winced. But this way, you know, Everton effectively now are reaping the rewards for doing quite a smart structured deal. I mean, I don't know what you think on that one, Ryan.
I think if we'd paid a fee up front, he'd still be in the squad this season. I don't think we'd be looking to loan him out or sell him. I think it's more the case of when they did the deal, obviously there wasn't going to be enough games in the season to pay it, you know, that season anyway. So I think in, you know, trying to put my Frank Lampard, Bill Kenwright hat on, that maybe they thought, well, I can't remember how many games he had. They say it was 18 games last season. We'll get him integrated into the squad. He can have an impact. You know, he'll start some, he'll come off the bench on some, then he'll hit the summer running and he'll be, you know, prime Dele Alli that can, you know, rip the league apart. And for whatever reason, you know, they've figured it out that he's probably not going to hit that ceiling. And then it comes to the point where you're like, well, in 7 games time, it's going to cost us £10 million regardless. Do we see that as value for money? And quite clearly they've said, no, we can spend £10 million on someone better. And I think that's what's led us to where we are today.
And let's not forget as well the circumstances in which he signed for Everton. You know, it was at that point where Vitor Pereira was ringing up Sky Sports, basically doing a job interview for himself. You know, we didn't have a director of football at the club then. You know, the club, you know, were holding free interviews at Farhad Moshiri's house in London, you know, and telling everybody about it before they got the job. Lampard was appointed pretty much, I think the day of the final day of the transfer window. And Everton were announcing Alli then as well. And based on the reporting at the time, it sounded like Lampard really wanted Van der Beek. But Everton just sort of made a move for Alli because he was available and Spurs were trying to get rid of him. And he sort of did this deal. So you sort of look at that and go, well, who actually wanted him then? You know, was it the owner? Was it the chairman? Had Lampard sort of briefed it in the interviews he'd done? So, you know, I want this player through the door. But you look at that and look at how mad Everton's January was, and you think about El Ghazi, Van der Beek, losing games left, right, and centre. All this noise around the football club. You know, spray painting on Goodison. You know, protests outside. The club was a madhouse then, and I think to sort of come in that environment probably hasn't helped them either. But you just sort of get the sense from watching him and seeing him in the flesh that it just looks like someone's just sort of, you know, popped him a little bit, and the air's just come out of him as a footballer.
I think it's unfair, and a lot of people won't let me say this. I think it's unfair on him the way in which that move come about, and the way in which they'd agree the deal on those things happening, because it puts a lot of pressure on a player that had been through a rigmarole that we've mentioned during this time at Spurs. Yes, it looked like he was on his way back. If that was the case, then Spurs certainly wouldn't want to be getting rid of him. I think the way Levy is as well, it seems to me, you can see it from so far away, that this is such a concoction from Kenwright and Levy that basically gets Spurs the way they want it.
What pressure do you think it put on him? In what sense do you mean?
The pressure is that he's not... When you sign a footballer, and so, like, for instance, let's say we've got Onana in right now, yeah? Comes in at us. How often... And this is a cliche that everybody comes out with when you sign a player that's not played in the Premier League before, or being somebody that's a young player, they would say he needs time to bed in. He needs time to get his feet into the ground and properly be able to become a decent player for us. That happens with every single transfer that goes to every single football club. That is a comment most people make. It's a cliche. To simply be able to say to somebody who's left Spurs, who've had all sorts of different things going on in recruitment themselves and managers leaving, for him to leave somewhere that he was so used to, he was there for so long as well, and the prodigy of being a top-class, a world-class international footballer at Spurs, to have sort of stepped so far out of favour with others at Spurs, and then being sent somewhere where they've immediately said to him, well, you know, you're not going to be playing unless you do well, almost immediately, and that's when Everton are going to have to pay money for you if you play well. I think that's harsh.
I think what it comes down to is, do you feel like our margins for error are as thin as last season? Okay. Now, granted, we were in denial for a lot of the first part of the season that this was going to be, you know, we were headed towards a relegation battle. I think our eyes are wide open now, but I also tend to think that we are, not even a great striker, Matt. Like, I don't think we need a great striker. I think we are average to above average striker away from the 14th place finish that we all kind of expect this season, right? Like a somewhat uninspiring but safe season. And again, I could be naive. I could be wrong on that. But I do think that, I think primarily my faith in that is because the center of our defense is, yet to be seen with Cody, especially if we at any point play in a four. I know what the manager says, but it'll be interesting to see what we do there. But in general, just with Tarkowski and him being fit, even if he's just his normal kind of above average to good self. And he plays 32, 35 games, which for him, that'd be kind of on the low end. That gives me some faith. The midfield, well, yet to be seen, but you got to admit, with Onana and Gay coming in, it's already... Just with those two moves, it's already better than any central midfield combination we had to roll out there last season. And so yes, the Richarlison thing, et cetera, this is certainly not a squad that's going to get anyone dreaming of Europe. I don't think that's the case. And if we were, then I think this problem of dropping these games early matters almost more, just because then you're thinking, oh gosh, that's we miss out on sixth or seventh place because we kind of conceded these early games. I mean, Chelsea, we were probably not favored to get anything from to begin with. Away at Villa, given our recent history, away at Villa Park. I mean, anywhere, but especially there, like, I can't say I'm shocked by that. But to that point, you know, if the manager can, and I guess he knows more than we do about the fitness of players, I just think he needs to let go of whatever this thing is that keeps him from just starting Rondon. You know, hopefully you start him and then you never have to start him again after you get a couple strikers in. But I think he's got to start at the weekend, even if he can only play 60 minutes. It's just too much time wasting in a game not to have a striker out there. And you saw the improvement in Everton once he came on, and once Onana came on. I think that for this season, if you're like me and you think that this is a club that the value of this season is not about the finishing place in the table, but about development and about taking steps forward that you don't see maybe in the standings per se, but you do see in terms of the development of players that will be part of something that matters next season and the seasons beyond, then I think you probably tend to think, all right, let's get this right. And now, what is getting it right? I think that's up for debate. It seems like the club, and tell me if you think differently, I don't know that I necessarily agree with the club, but it sure does feel like they are holding on for as long as possible for Armando Broja. Whether you agree with that or not, it feels like they are trying to, that they could have pushed the button and signed, a striker at any time over the last week or two, but that they're kind of thinking, and I still think that they are trying to sign more than one attacking player, because this team needs goals. I think there's a reason they were linked with Morgan Gibbs-White, for instance, before the Gordon thing. And so I think, players like that. So I tend to think, and now you hear the stuff about Ismail Yassar from Watford, and you hear, you're hearing about, like, it looks like a combo of a wing and a striker coming in. I mean, who knows? But the bottom line is that it feels like they're holding out for their best possible outcome, which I don't necessarily hate that idea, because this is a long season. What complicates all this, Matt, is, and this can be a good complication because suddenly you have more resources to play with, but what is the resolution of the Anthony Gordon situation? You heard Mark and I talk about this on Kickabout this week. I think we're both at a certain price. I think it's, for us, it's a bit of a no-brainer, but it becomes far less of a muddied argument the closer we get to the end of the window, because that deal can't be getting done 2 days before the end of the window unless Everton already have the replacement lined up and ready to spend that money. But that's a dangerous game to play. So all these things, and then we haven't even mentioned Delhi to Turkey, as part of the equation of money and how that affects things. This can be a very good end to the window, but it feels like the time for the ramp up is over, and the time for pushing all those buttons we talk about is now.
Yeah, we've got to the point where we've got to start setting deadlines on various things, haven't we? You know, you mentioned Anthony Gordon there. If this goes on, like you said, into the final days of the window, Everton have surely got to get to a point where it's like, no, that's it. Now, regardless of whatever we think in terms of value and all those kind of things, he is a member of the first team squad. And if Everton let him go that late in the window and they're not convinced they can replace him, then he's got to stay, hasn't he? You know, that's sort agreed. Of where we're at. But I think what I'm really interested in by, and I hope this situation doesn't materialise, obviously, but is if Everton were to struggle on Saturday and maybe play out to tear to draw or lose. I think all of a sudden then the ground becomes quite rife for them to panic, I think. And I think you know, we can sit here now, and I think me and you probably would say we're quite happy with the business that's been done so far in the main, albeit there's one glaring omission. I think it's been sensible by and large. They made some smart moves in regards to, you know, loans and free transfers. They spent money on a youngster because he's got loads of potential. You know, Nana McNeil's not really shown it yet, but, you know, I think there's obviously hopes for him as well. But
two games, yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's going to be a test for Everton in a way. If they were to struggle on Saturday, it gets a little bit, you know, people are a bit unhappy. Maybe they struggle in attack again. Then can they maintain the heads and keep being sensible with the business? Or do we go back into that mold, or sorry, that mode rather, which we've been in at the end of so many transfer windows, even going back to the last one where we signed Anwar Al-Ghazi, we signed Dele Alli, we signed Donny van der Beek, when we didn't actually have a director of football or a manager in place at the time. So
I don't know that it goes that bad, but yeah, I guess it's a legit concern though.
But you know, you can almost feel how it would unravel, can't you? Because we've been there before. You know, it feels, obviously we don't know this, but it feels like Kevin Falwell has been given a lot more autonomy to just go and get the players he wants, because there's obviously links to a lot of those players. But it certainly feels like he's the one who is directing the football as the director of football now. And maybe there's a bit less influence from the manager, maybe a bit less influence from the owner. And I just don't know if that'll continue. Everton were to have another couple of bad results before the end of the window and the signings haven't come in. Like I don't want it to happen, but I'll be sort of intrigued to see if they could keep the cool, or if they will keep the cool in those situations, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, it's honestly, this whole power dynamic has been the most fascinating development of the summer for me in some ways, in terms of the big picture. In the last several years, I don't know that it's been more clear to me who is largely responsible for the players being acquired than what we've seen this summer. Whether you like it or not. Now, granted, I Dwight McNeil, we had been interested in before. But all the reporting talked about, his Kevin Thelwell being pretty involved in the way in which deals were structured, and really, frankly, whether it was Vinagre or the fact that there's been interest in Gibbs White, the Connor Cody thing, Onana certainly had Kevin Thelwell's fingerprints all over it. I think that it's pretty clear to see that from a, I guess you call it like a poker playing straight face standpoint, that long period of inactivity of the summer that always drives us crazy was actually for a purpose. This season was waiting for prices to get to where he wanted for certain players and for certain situations to develop. I think that's somewhat admirable. Now, all of that will be for naught if a striker isn't brought. I think that there's really no chance that a striker isn't brought in before the end of the window. I think that you have your, I think he feels with the time left, he still has a chance at his number one target. And he's also, and if you want to look at this in a glass is half full kind of way, all of these links, these, especially even if you want to dismiss some of the less credible ones, let's just go with the most credible ones. I think that you can absolutely say, and we've seen the reporting to back it up, that the links to Shea Adams and to Brereton Diaz, those are real links. And so it almost feels like, and I know this is a word that we're not used to hearing when it comes to the Everton director of football, but it almost seems like he has lined up a contingency plan in case his number one plan doesn't work. The running joke about Marcel Brands that he has been no pun intended, that he's been branded with was the Kurt Zuma summer. We all remember. It feels like he did not set up any other outcome other than getting him, and then it didn't work out. And so you feel now like there's a part of me that thinks, well, Broja's number, the guy he still ultimately wants from a metric standpoint, a statistical background standpoint, I think that they look at him and think this is the most kind of similar profile to kind of a Richarlison type that we could can acquire. He's nowhere near where he's going to be, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's what he wants. And then you've got these other options there.
They lost five players who were on loan after Wembley. And we thought, speaking on the podcast, we thought they might get two or three back. And then we said they still need another eight to build a squad. So that was 11. So they have surpassed that. And I think they might end up at 19. And that is an element of a gamble to that, for sure. But I think what surprised us and Forest fans is probably the ambition and the signings that they've gone for. I think they've signed players like Lewis O'Brien and Harry Toffolo from Huddersfield. And we thought there'd be quite a lot of that sort of signing, good championship players who can make the step up. But now that, you know, they've got in Jesse Lingard, obviously. They might sign Jose Maur from Lyon, who's a good player. Dean Henderson's a great signing. So they've a guy called Moussa Niakate, I think, is going to be a big established centre-half by the end of the season. So it's probably the ambition as much as the size of the cheques that are being cashed that surprised people, but not the number of signings particularly. And people in Nottingham knew this was coming, and I think it's just taken others unawares in the media and perhaps fans outside of Nottingham, just the scale of Forest business, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the Jesse Lingard one is obviously the one which is the most high profile. I think Everton were linked to him. And being honest, I was quite happy that Everton left that alone, given the money that was being bandied around. But, you know, when I was looking through the list of signs before, when I knew I was going to speak to you, I imagine what's probably quite encouraging for Forest fans is that the money you've spent on, or the big money you've spent, so people like Awoniyi, Williams, Dennis, Mangala, Biasone, you know, they're lads who were, you know, rattling the ranges off 24, 21, 24, 24, 22. It's not as if you're sort of going in and spending money on players that you might not necessarily have any resale value on, or players who may be on the downward in the Premier League career. A lot of these feel like dead sensible signings, and maybe if a couple of them go on to do really well, you can sell them on for a profit and reinvest in the squad. It feels like there's sort of thinking behind what looks like a pretty chaotic situation from the outside.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of signings who come in with the potential to grow with the club, hopefully, and maybe this season, if they can stay up, that's great. And then these players have another year in the Premier League, and then you finish a little bit higher. And like you say, you might sell one or two who have massive seasons. And then if they go down, you know, some of those players will leave, but then there's a few others there who you can stay and build around in an effort to get back up. I think Lingard's the outlier, really, amongst them. He's 29 and he's come in on big money, but it's a free transfer. So without the transfer fee attached, it's not as economically bad as people seem to think of it. And he might stay, he might go, but he's the one who doesn't really fit into the transfer mould. But you do need that little X factor and that bit of quality. And I think we've seen in the two games so far that he's not match fit, but he can be the player Forest need him to be. I can understand why other clubs will be put off by him, but as a promoted club, to land a player who's got 30 England caps and played in a World Cup 4 years ago, then when you sign Dele Alli, I mean, it doesn't always work, but it does encourage Forest fans and show that we think they're moving in the right direction, for sure. Sports Social Podcast Network.